This is Molly Smith, host of From the Median. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Chrisanne Hall, former prosecutor and constitutional expert. Her topic is why we must defend our constitution so as to defend the right to life. This presentation is designed especially for you.
It is my honor and my pleasure to be here for the first time. I am very excited about the opportunity to be here. I want to mention to you first, everybody has one of these on the table. This is how you find me. So you can grab one of these off the table or off your seat. This is my website. I teach all over the country. Last year I taught 265 trainings in 22 states. And so I stay very busy. But what I want to talk to you tonight or this morning, is about something very important. Now, I am not going to tell you what the Supreme Court says about the Constitution, because I believe the Supreme Court's opinion about the Constitution is irrelevant. The federal our founders did not empower the Supreme Court with the power to interpret the Constitution in order to enlarge the powers of the federal government. And that is something that they have done on their own, which really took root in 1803 in a decision called Marbury versus Madison, where the Supreme Court declared themselves the supreme rulers of the universe. Wouldn't you like to be a part of that group? I am going to tell you today what the founders of our nation thought when they wrote the Constitution, when they declared their independence from Great Britain, because I believe that the men who wrote the Constitution are way more relevant than a bunch of women and men in black robes. Thomas Jefferson said, "The God that gave us life gave us liberty." He also said in the Declaration of Independence that all men are created equal and endowed with certain inalienable rights, among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. He also said in the Declaration of Independence that men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter and abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Such forms, such measures, these ends. What is he talking about? He's talking about life. We institute government not because we like to be ruled over. We institute government, as the Constitution of the United States says, to preserve the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. If you do not have life, you cannot have liberty. If you do not preserve life, you cannot have posterity to preserve liberty for. Our framers said time and time again that liberty and life go hand in hand. Richard Henry Lee wrote in Letters from a Federalist Farmer, number 4, "It is true we are not disposed to differ much at present about religion. But as we are creating a nation for ages and millions yet unborn, let us preserve religious liberty as a part of that national compact." This is something that our framers said over and over and over again. You know that they pledged life, fortune, and sacred honor so that you and I could live in a place where we were no longer ruled by kings. But they were not doing that for themselves. They said time time again. We are doing this for ages and millions yet unborn. Sam Adams said this, "Let us contemplate our forefathers and posterity and resolve to maintain the rights bequeathed to us from the former for the sake of the latter. The necessity of times more than ever calls for the utmost circumspection, deliberation, fortitude, and perseverance. Let us remember," he says, "that if we tamely suffer a lawless attack on liberty, we encourage it and involve others in our doom." He said that it's a very serious consideration that millions yet unborn may be the miserable sharers of our experience. There are things that we have failed to teach about the Constitution, about the foundation of this nation, about the principles upon which we were created as a union, that are bringing out the very destruction of the life and liberty that the men and women gave everything to secure and preserve. Sam Adams said, "Among the natural rights of the colonists are these: first, life; secondly, liberty; third, property together, number four, with the right to protect and defend them in the best means possible." First, life. Because again, if you do not have life, you will never have liberty. You can never have property. And you have an inherent right to protect life. But I know that you hear from people who are raised and taught things about our Constitution that are simply not true. That you have no constitutional standing to defend your life. That because it's not in the Constitution, then you can't protect it, and the government, therefore, has the authority to regulate it. You can only have this opinion if you are completely constitutionally ignorant. You see, there are certain provisions in the Constitution that limit government. As a matter of fact, the 10th Amendment declares that if it's not been specifically enumerated, the federal government doesn't get it. There are no exceptions to that. Only exceptions that exist are the ones that the government has written in for themselves, through an enlargement of their own powers through their own decisions. So what we really need to do is understand, how do we protect our Constitution so that we can protect life? And the ultimate protection is in the Constitution. It is in the Bill of Rights. It's called the Ninth Amendment. The enumeration of certain rights in the Constitution shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. The Ninth Amendment literally declares that every right in the universe, whether it's written down or not, belongs to you. We are the holders of all the rights, because they are given to us by God and not decreed upon us by government. We have got to really grasp that and understand that and get a hold of it, because I don't believe that we believe it anymore. We're so willing to trade our liberty and our rights for provision, for protection, for comfort and prosperity. But if you tamely suffer a lawless attack on liberty, then you not only suffer millions and ages yet to come will be the sharers of our negligence. The Ninth Amendment declares that all the rights in the universe belong to us. And Sam Adams said the very first right that we have is life. Our framers knew this. They did not have to enumerate that we have life because the Ninth Amendment already did. There was argument about whether we should have a Bill of Rights or not. Some people said that if we have a Bill of Rights, it will be dangerous for us to write down rights. Alexander Hamilton was one of these people. Alexander Hamilton said, "I go further and affirm that the Bills of Rights, in the sense and to the extent in which they are contended for, are not only unnecessary but dangerous. They would contain various exceptions to powers not granted, and on this very account would afford a colorable pretext to claim they did not belong to us, that it would vest in the government a power to regulate our rights." He says, "They might urge, with a semblance of reason, that the Constitution ought not be charged with the absurdity of providing against the abuse of an authority which was not given." You see, Hamilton knew, as James Madison would say in Federalist 45, that the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. Madison would continue and say, "The powers delegated by the Constitution to the federal government are reserved to external objects," by which he meant foreign affairs. "We created the central government to be a foreign diplomat on behalf of the states." That's the purpose of your federal government. The only purpose. And Madison continues and says, "The powers delegated are reserved to external objects." He names them war, peace, negotiation, foreign commerce. That is all your federal government is entitled to have its federal fingers in. He says everything else remains in the states. Hamilton's saying if all we have delegated to the federal government in these few enumerated powers, then why do we have to tell them the things that they cannot touch? If we make a list and tell them about the things that they cannot touch, Hamilton says, one of two arguments, if not both, is inevitably going to come from your central government. Argument number one, you've made a great list. We certainly don't want to trample on the things that you've put on your list. And since we don't want to trample on those things that are on your list, we have to know what they are. For instance, you don't want us to infringe on your freedom of press. Well, the federal government will inevitably say, what is press? Because if you don't want us to trample on it, then we certainly need to know what it is. And Hamilton said there is no way to define a liberty without opening the door for it to be regulated. Because the federal government will inevitably say, okay, this is press. But that's not press. And since we know this is press, then we will respect your list and we won't infringe upon it. But since we've identified this is not press, then that means that we've been vested with the power to regulate it. Now, I know that you have heard this on television. What is press? We know that AP, we know that Fox, we know their press, but are bloggers press? Are tweeters press? We have to ask 21st century questions about a document that was written 200 years ago. The problem is, Hamilton already warned us that this was going to happen, and the First Amendment means you don't need government approval. That's the whole point of it existing. But Hamilton said another argument will exist. They'll say it's a great list. We certainly don't want to trample on your list. We will respect everything that is on your list. But wait a minute. That one's not on the list. And since that one's not on the list, then we must be able to regulate it. That's the argument you're hearing about life. Oh, well, it's not on the list. And it's the very argument that Alexander Hamilton warned us about if we were to enumerate rights. But James Madison gave us the solution to Hamilton's argument. He says, it has been objected also against a Bill of Rights that by enumerating particular exceptions to those rights, it would disparage those which were not placed in that enumeration. And it might follow by implication that those rights which were not singled out were intended to be vested assigned into the hands of the general government and were consequently insecure. And then Madison says, this is one of the most plausible arguments I have ever heard urged against the acceptance of a Bill of Rights. He's saying, Hamilton, I hear you, but I've got the solution. He says, but I conceive that it may be guarded against. I have attempted it, he says, as gentlemen may see by turning to the last clause of the fourth resolution. Madison's solution to Hamilton's argument stated, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. The argument, or the solution to Hamilton's argument, is the Ninth Amendment. The very reason we have the Ninth Amendment is to defeat that general government argument that it's not on the list and therefore it's ours to regulate. But because we don't teach the Constitution anymore, we don't teach where it came from, we don't teach the debate that brought us each provision, we in turn become, as a people, constitutionally ignorant. And when we, the people, do not know about the Constitution, then how can we expect our government to know as well? Because remember, the government receives its just powers from the consent of the governed. And everything that your government does today is done by your consent. Whether it be a positive assertion of approval or a silence, because silence is consent. We have to understand, as Sam Adams said, among the natural rights of the colonists are these: first, life; secondly, liberty; third, property, together with an inalienable right, an inherent right to protect life, liberty, property. Sam Adams would continue and say, these are evident branches of, rather than deductions from, the duty of self-preservation, commonly called the first law of nature. He says, when men enter into society, it is by voluntary consent, and they have a right to demand and insist upon the performance of such conditions and previous limitations as form of equitable original contract. The Constitution is a legally binding contract between the state that created the federal government and put them into a limited and defined box. And it is our inherent right to maintain them within those boundaries. And when they escape it, it is our inherent right to put them back. These are the things that we need to remember. Adams continues and says, every natural right not expressly given up or from the nature of social compact necessarily ceded remains. And all. Who do you suppose that word all means? All. He says all civil laws should conform as far as possible to the law of natural reason and equity. All civil laws must conform to the fact that we have an inalienable right, an inherent right to life, liberty, property, and the inseparable right to protect and defend them. But this is our responsibility. Our founders never intended to vest in the federal government the power to choose who lives and who does not live. Our founders never intended to invest in any government the power to choose who can live and who cannot live. Because without life, you cannot have liberty. And the whole purpose of the Constitution is the preservation of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. We have to understand that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is what our Constitution is based upon. But we are not a reflection of our government. Our government is a reflection of its people. John Adams said, liberty must be supported at all hazards. We have a right to it derived from our Maker. How many of you in this room today agree that liberty is a gift from God? Well, that's what John Adams is telling us. We have a right to liberty derived from our Maker. What John Adams was explaining to us very simply is natural law. Natural law teaches that we are created in the image of God. And since we are created in the image of God, we've inherited certain traits from God. Just like we're all biologically created in the image of our parents, and our hair color, our eye color, come from our parents. Ladies, you can join me here. The older I get, the more I look in the mirror, the more I see my mother. Because we've been biologically created in the image of our parents, we've inherited something from them. But we are taught through natural law and through the Bible that we are created in the image of God, which means we have inherited certain things from God. One thing that we've inherited from God is freedom. God is the most free being in the universe. Please raise your hand if it's your job every day to wake up and tell God how to run things. Men, don't put your wives' hands in the air. See, we don't do that because God has ultimate freedom. But you see, we have inherited that freedom as well. Not the wisdom, and thank God, not the power. But we have that freedom. But we don't understand what that freedom means anymore. Because we don't want to live in a country built on freedom. Freedom is not what we should be striving for. Because freedom means I'm free to lie, I'm free to steal, and I'm free to murder. I am free to do whatever I want to do because I am free. And it doesn't matter how it hurts you or anybody else. See, liberty and freedom are not the same thing. liberty is really freedom plus morality. Liberty means I am free. I am free to lie. I'm free to steal and I'm free to murder. But I will not because I know it's wrong. Did you know that laws don't stop crimes? Really? Do you know the criminal justice system is not designed to stop crimes? The criminal justice system is designed to identify criminal activity and set up a mechanism to punish criminals. If laws stopped crimes, we would be a crime-free country because we've got way too many laws. The only thing that will stop someone from murdering their neighbor is knowing that there are consequences and knowing that it's wrong. And our framers knew that we had to preserve liberty or we would have no rights. And if we have no rights, we have no life. How is it that we live where a government can presume a power to determine who can live and who cannot? Because we've raised up generations of people who presumed it first. There is an enormous amount of personal responsibility required to be an educated and involved citizen in a constitutional republic. We are not a democracy. Can I just say that again very loud and very clear? We are not a democracy. We are a republic, which is very, very different. And I believe if we really knew the difference, we would not be in the situation that we're in today. Do you see, if we lived in a kingdom, that meant the king holds all the power and hands out the rights as he sees fit. And if a king can hand out rights, what can he do? Take them away. A republic is the complete opposite. It's the Ninth Amendment that declares us a republic because in a republic, the people hold all the rights and delegate to government the power that they get to use. And if we hold all the rights and delegate to the power of the government, what do we get to do? Take them back when they abuse them. But what's a democracy? There's a huge difference between a kingdom and a republic. But there is no difference between a kingdom and a democracy. The only real difference between a kingdom and a democracy is how many people hold all the power. When you live in a kingdom, it's just the king. But when you live in a democracy, it's the mob. Democracy is mob rule. Democracy means the majority, whoever the majority is at the time, holds all the rights and all the power, and hands them out as they see fit. And if the majority can hand out the rights, what can they do? Take them back. Now, if I'm a member of a minority community, I'm going to be strictly opposed to us being a democracy because minorities never have any rights in a democracy unless the majority grants it to be so. And if they grant it to be so today, it could be wrong tomorrow. How many of you have heard of a term called mob rule? We have that terminology because we know, and excuse the harshness of my language, but mobs are stupid and fickle. Mobs don't act intelligently, they act emotionally. And when you have that kind of a fickle, flip-flopping rule, then what's right today could be wrong tomorrow, and you have no control over that. And the minority groups never have any power in a democracy. Do you know how I know we're not a democracy? If we had been a democracy, the civil rights movement would have failed. Because only in a constitutional republic where people have equal power through equal representation can a minority have a society-changing voice. We had better be more concerned with what kind of government that we have and the security of our rights and understanding what they are, then perhaps balanced budgets, Duck Dynasty, or Dancing with Stars. Because we might get excited about those things, but they do not preserve our liberty. I want to mention to you that USA Today did an article last year where they interviewed people about government or the population being involved in social issues. And in this article, they said some social issues seem to touch, or people want them to touch, on constitutional issues. And they asked this engineer, a 26-year-old engineer, what she thought about morality being involved in political and in lawmaking processes. And she said, God, purpose, you don't need an opinion on these things to function. You do, however, need to have an opinion on these things if you wish to secure liberty. We had better become a constitutionally minded people. We had better become a liberty-minded people. Because if we do not, can I mention, since it appears that most of our students are on this side, can I mention to you that the majority of this side of the room will never really suffer from the consequences of our negligence? I teach history, and history proves the future. Patrick Henry said, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know no way to judge the future but by the past. Alexander Hamilton said, experience is the oracle of truth, and where its responses are unequivocal, they ought to be held to be sacred and conclusive. How many of you have heard those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it? Can I mention to you that that's not true? Because history, Patrick Henry told us, always repeats itself. How many of you heard of a guy named Solomon? Didn't he say there's nothing new under the sun? History always repeats itself. Human nature never changes. But those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat its mistakes. And I know history. That's what I teach. I taught 265 times last year in 22 states. And I see the very mistakes that have been made over 700 years unfolding right before our feet because we've become ignorant of our history. We've become negligent in our responsibilities. And history proves that you and I will not suffer from our negligence. We've not seen the beginning of tyranny. But what we will do if we fail to stand now is condemn our future generations to purchase back a gift that was supposed to be given to them by us. And history proves that they will not have the opportunity to do that at the ballot box, that they will be forced to do it with their blood. It is time for us to get educated. We are drowning in information in this country. But we are starving for education. There is a difference. You cannot be educated in 140 characters or less. You cannot be educated with a scrolling headline. And you cannot be educated in your nightly news. The only thing that can educate you is truth. And the sad truth is not fair and balanced. truth is the truth, and sometimes it's unpleasant, and sometimes it hurts. It is time for we the people to restore America back to its greatness. And the only way we can do that is if we are willing to preserve our liberty above our lives and our prosperity, above our cell phones, our flat screen TVs, our vacations, and our eating out. Our framers thought that it was above everything, life, fortune, and sacred honor. I want to give you some encouragement today. You ready for some encouragement? I was not born a constitutionalist. I was not born with an inherent knowledge of the foundation of our country, what our framers intended, what liberty meant, and its value. I am a recovering liberal. I was raised in a home where church was not important. There was a copy of the Bible, but it was never referenced. I was raised in a home with a parent who was angry at God. And I grew up thinking that if there was a God, he was simply some maniacal puppet master that got his thrills from making us miserable. I began to seek comfort for a massive hole that I had in my spirit, but I did not understand what I was seeking for. I looked in every single world religion. I looked in every single opportunity. I looked into fellowship with the wrong people. I looked into occultism. I looked into drugs. And everything that I shoved into that hole disappeared and left me feeling empty and void and wanting more. I believed, because I was smart, that only stupid people, weak people, needed God. And since I was so smart, I was incapable of having faith, because I didn't need it. That is the great deception. When I accepted Christ into my life, that void that I was searching forever was immediately filled and overflowing. I no longer was hungry and looking for fellowship in the wrong place, because I had a loving God who created me with a purpose. I no longer believed I was a souped up monkey. I no longer believed I was a cosmic accident. And as a matter of fact, I believed, and I know, that it takes more faith to believe that the universe was created by an explosion than it does to know that I was created by a God who loves me, who not only hung the moon and the stars, but knows every hair on my head. You see, you cannot separate liberty from faith. You cannot separate life from the giver of life. And we, as the believers, have an even greater responsibility for life, fortune, and sacred honor. Thomas Jefferson said, "The God who gave us life gave us liberty." How can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we remove their only firm foundation, the conviction in the minds of men that liberty is a gift from God? But then he concludes by saying, "I indeed tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and we cannot, and his justice cannot sleep forever." If you believe that liberty is a gift from God, then the parable of the talents teaches that you have a responsibility to prosper it. If you bury your liberty in the sand, you will stand before God one day and He will ask you, what have you done with the gift of liberty that I've given you? And you said, well, I was afraid to say something because I was afraid I would offend someone. I was afraid that my friends wouldn't like me anymore. I was afraid that my co-workers would ostracize me or I would lose my job. Pastors in the pulpit say, I was afraid I would lose my 501c3. The parable of the talents teaches us the only response you will hear, if that is your explanation to God, is, wicked, slothful servant. And your liberty will be taken and given to someone who believes that it's worthy of prospering. There is an enormous amount of personal responsibility with liberty that falls into the hands of every living, breathing human being. But to whom much is given, much is required. And to the believers, you have a greater responsibility because you know there will be a day of reckoning. And you have the opportunity to hear from God one day, well done, good and faithful servant. This is the message that I teach all over the country. The parable of the talents is how God taught me, called me to this message. This is why I taught 265 times in 1 year. This is why I'm away from my home 3 weeks out of every month. This is why I do everything that I do for free. I have no speaking fees. I don't require travel or accommodations. There are no excuses if you take one of those flyers and you want me to teach in your church, in your school, in your group, because all you have to do is schedule me. Because I believe that where God calls, He provides. He has provided people with great generous hearts to prosper this ministry that I'm in, and me with a knowledge to write books and do things to get us the funds that we need. I have a request of you before we go to question and answers. Would you please pray for us? We battle not flesh and blood, but powers and principalities. And you have to know the message that I teach is not popular in certain circles. I need your prayers and my family needs your prayers for us to have the strength and spiritual fortitude to continue. Again, you can go on the table and find the things, how to contact me on my website. I have a table out there with the four books that I've written. I'm not going to take up time to mention them specifically. I have two children's books, one for middle school, high school students, one for elementary and younger, and two adult books. And so I hope that you'll find us. If you have more questions, you can, and we don't have time here, we can, oh my goodness. All right. Well, let's go. You tell me stop, because I'm going to keep going.
Fabulous, fabulous. Make sure you take this card that is on your table. Make sure you just answered quite a few of the questions by pointing to your books. This right. is because people want to know, where can we get more? What about the public schools? What are the four things which we are live streaming? It's on Bring America Back to Life website. You will be able to hear it over and over again.
Well, I do teach you've just done in amazing. Schools. Okay. Of those 265 times that I taught each last year, 21 of them were on high school, middle school, and college campuses. I just came from teaching in a Christian school here in Ohio, and last week I taught in two government schools, a high school and middle school in Southeast Texas.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to. There are some questions I do want you to answer. Okay. So we're going to look at the books. We're going to listen to the tape. We're going to get as much information. Those of you that know schools you would like this presentation. But what are the practical steps? Two people asked this question. One wanted to know just three things that we can do to reclaim those rights we have ceded to the federal government and are being abused by the government. That came in quite a bit.
This book.
Okay.
This book, you know, that question star is the most asked question I get when I travel. What do we do?
Yeah, right.
That's
practical
why I wrote this book,
okay.
Liberty First, The Path to Restoring America. What I've done is pulled from history the things that the people have been doing over centuries and converted them into contemporary mechanisms. 10 things that we can do as everyday citizens to restore America back to these principles.
All right. This one was interesting then because that question did come up quite a bit. What are the moral limits to the constitutional right to defend life? I suppose during your presentation, you did talk about some of the limitations.
Right. Well, the moral limits are very specific. Do we have to describe them, to be honest? The right to keep and bear arms and the right to protect yourself is not the right to be stupid and murder. You cannot have a right to be negligent and take someone else's right, because that's not morality, right? That's freedom. Freedom means you can do whatever you want, regardless of how that affects people. Morality is the understanding that you are free to do whatever you want, but you can't do something that takes someone else's liberty from them.
All right, another question came in. Do you believe that there are inherent weaknesses in the Constitution, such as the elastic clause? What is the role of any such weakness in the increase in power? It sounds like it's asking.
I do not believe there are inherent weaknesses in the Constitution. I believe there are weaknesses within the Constitution because the people are constitutionally ignorant. You see, the Constitution is a contract, a legally binding contract. And if you apply the laws of contract law and the proper mechanisms of interpreting a contract as contract law dictates, then there are no weaknesses. Because contract law says if you perceive a weakness in the contract, you have to return to the drafters of the contract to determine what they meant when they wrote that. Our framers did not leave ambiguity. They wrote reams and reams and reams about what they meant. Do you know that James Madison wrote that if we allowed the general welfare clause to mean that the Congress can do generally whatever they want, that there would be specific consequences for allowing that? Mm-hmm. And then he gave us the warnings for those. So we, if we became as educated as they were when they wrote it, and we have that available to us, then the Constitution would not be weak because it's based on over 1,000 years of blood-bought, time-tested principles.
All right, the final question. Do we still have time for one more question that I can combine two because they're similar. They want advice to offer to the youth to combat today's pressures in our culture, which is what this question was asking about the Constitution. Is it sufficient to address these unique questions? If you could wrap it up very quickly, I'd appreciate it.
The Constitution is not an outdated, irrelevant document because it's not a statute book. It doesn't tell you you can only drive 75 on the interstate. The Constitution is a document of time-tested, proven principles. And by the very nature of the word principle, they are not negotiable and they do not change. And the best thing that I can teach you very quickly to become constitutionally educated is to become educated on the history of those principles that brought us to there. It took 700 years to write the Constitution. It was not written in 1787. Our liberty was not invented in 1776. And over those 700 years, there were 5 documents that had to be written. Because Thomas Jefferson did not write the Declaration of Independence, he plagiarized it from these 5 documents. And that just so happens to be the history that I teach, and the history that I will be teaching across this greater Cleveland area for the next 10 days. So if you go to my calendar on my website, you will see where I'm going to be teaching this history over the next 10 days.
You have been listening to Chris Ann Hall, former prosecutor and constitutional expert, and 2014 Bringing America Back to Life Symposium speaker. This presentation was brought to you by Cleveland Right to Life, whose educational programs include the annual Bringing America Back to Life Symposium and From the Median radio program.